Well, well, well. Look who decided to show up to work. Adamara's is back. This is Locked On Nuggets.
You are Locked On Nuggets, your daily Denver Nuggets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On Nuggets, your daily Denver Nuggets podcast, part of the Locked On Network, your team every day. Thanks for making us your first listen each and every day. We're free and available on all platforms, including YouTube, where you can join the show. Join the chat section. Give your feedback. It's an awesome time. You should join it. You should do it. Today's episode is brought to you by Bet Online. Bet Online has you covered this season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. Bet Online, where the game starts. My name's Matt Moore, but you don't care about me. You care about this guy on the other side. Adam Mares is back.
And what's up, everyone?
He is more fired up than I have seen him in a long time to do the show. He is so excited to be back. He's so excited to join you guys. He's so excited to give his takes on the presser. We're going to talk more about the Josh Kroenke.
I'm so excited that, look at this. I got a Locked On hat on. I've got a Locked On shirt on. Look at me, man.
You're on brand. You were on brand, sir. I was like, oh, I should go. We could go get mine. We could be twinsies. We will talk today about Josh Kroenke's presser. We're going to talk about like what the central message that Adam took away from it was. In the second segment, we're going to talk about what it reveals about how the Kroenke's view running the Denver Nuggets organization. And in the third segment, we're going to talk a little bit about the extemporanea from the presser, including the practice facility, all that, and more. Okay, Adam, first off, welcome back, buddy.
Thank you so much. You did a great job holding down the fort. I listened to the shows. Very good. I enjoyed even your response, your immediate response. I'll tell you, one of the reasons I'm excited to talk today is I had a weekend to digest the Kroenke presser. All the people that had to do these in the immediate or shortly after, you know, kind of go from it and then give thoughts. I think that's really hard to do. It was a 40-minute presser, and there was a lot of, I thought, things in there that as I got to dissect it, that's when I feel like things kind of revealed themselves to me. So kudos to you for being able to kind of get those out in such short order. And I'm excited to kind of go even more deep on that today.
So let's start there. So again, if you missed it, Kroenke did hold his press conference on Thursday. And
was it Thursday? I thought it was Friday.
It may have been Friday. All the days bleed together for me, Adam. And so we talked about a number of things on the show, but I want to ask you this right out of the top. You kind of mentioned before we went live that you said that there were certain things that he was repeating, the message, right? Wanted to be on message because they obviously are prepped for these meetings to try and convey what it is that they wanted to get out there. And I thought that your thought on that was interesting because I think I may have missed it. What do you think was the reiterating central message that Josh Kroenke was trying to bang home consistently?
We're going to have to work through, because I don't know if I have a central message, like if I can distill it down. There probably is one, and maybe we'll get to it. But there were certain things that I thought almost like a stump speech that were, hey, I've got my lines I'm going to go to. And he went to him multiple times. One of these was about revolving shark teeth, which I think he used four different times. We'll talk about that, I think, more in the second segment. Revolving shark teeth as an organization. It's how we structure our organization so that if you lose somebody, we were prepared to lose, even if we didn't want to lose somebody, we were prepared to lose somebody. So I thought that was an interesting one. He reiterated the line about it was more, you know, this Comcast dispute, it's actually harder on us than it is on anyone, which is my least favorite part of the entire thing. Yes. But he used that one on multiple occasions. That was one that came up a couple different times. Let me see what else I have here. Because there was another one that I thought was even more important that that he used. I think maybe the most shocking and jarring, and I think it formed the conversation on the various podcasts in the Nuggets world. This was, I thought, a contentious Josh Kroenke, more so than I have ever seen. Meaning, I think that we knew Tim Connelly didn't want to leave. We knew that there was, you know, it was kind of weird some of the different ways it went down. He used side door multiple times, I think three or four times when talking about this, that, oh, you know, they went through the side door on this. They didn't go through the front door. He was under contract. We had a deal. This was a side door operation. He mentioned phantom equity and some of these things. Like, He mentioned desperate organizations. We're not a startup. There was a lot of this like very pointed language that, again, and when he arrived at those, he arrived at them again, as in a like almost a note card way of like, okay, I want to get to this. We are not a startup. Like, okay, this is a talking point I'm going to get to. They came through the side door. Like, okay, I want to make sure I get that in there. So this was, it was all things that revealed to me that he felt in some capacity that this went down in a way that was maybe not fully above board, and that it put the it put the Kroenke organization in a bind in a way that was, I don't want to say unfair, but that was unexpected to them.
Yes. So I it was interesting that contentious, because if you say that they held a contentious presser, right? What that typically means is like the person and the media were going back and forth. And that wasn't the case here.
Right, right.
Correct. And a lot of that is because like there wasn't a reporter in the room, because one was covering the avalanche, that was going to be like, I'm going to grandstand and get into this whole back and forth thing with you. Right. Like I explained on the show, like my objective is like, I'm trying to go around your contentiousness. I'm trying to diffuse you so I can get to the answer I want.
You want information. So becoming contentious often does not lead to that. It might lead to a good story, might lead to a good quote, but you are more interested in getting information.
Yeah, I want to know what the deal is. And so,
and by the way, I wanted to say this. I thought you did a great job in particular, and I thought a lot of people in the media asked some very good questions. Yes. Like I was worried about that. There's one question that did not necessarily get asked, but we'll get to that in a little bit.
Brendan, Ryan, Mike, they all did great jobs, just really good jobs of asking the questions that needed to be asked. I was, I mean, this is a weird thing to say, but like, I was proud of the way that the Denver Nuggets media, we handled that presser where we pushed him enough without making it into a whole big dramatic thing. Cause I hate it when that happens. So you mentioned kind of the word pointed. That was how I described the presser on Twitter. Is I was like, this is a very pointed one. And I took away that same kind of perspective that you did, where it was being there, it was like, you know, when he looks right, like he pauses, looks right in the camera, because the Denver Nuggets are not a startup. Like
he had that line ready to go. I feel like that was
what, boom, roasted. Looked like the look into the camera.
I don't think Josh Kroenke's all too worried about making friends with the Minnesota Timberwolves.
That was the other thing. Is like he's so. I will say this without, I don't have enough of the particulars to be able to like give like the inside scoop here. But what I will tell you, I mentioned this on Friday, is that the way that this went down, and everyone in Denver that has connections knew that there was an uneasiness from all parties about how this went down. What I find particularly interesting is there was another party that got involved because of their relationship to the Minnesota Timberwolves. And that is not the Wolves organization, and that is not KSE, and is not Tim Connelly. And I mentioned it in passing without like really thinking about it. When things got contentious, when things got serious after the Saturday meeting a few weeks ago with the Minnesota Timberwolves, Annie Miller came to represent Tim Connelly. If you don't know this, Annie Miller is a longtime agent. Annie Miller is also, not only was he at the center of a large federal investigation that was ultimately completely acquitted, and there was no charges filed, not acquitted, but no charges were filed. But he is also the head of coaching and executive talent with Clutch Sports. And it is just not hard for me to go, Clutch becomes involved, things get messy. That is not an uncommon trend. So that's like another, that's another angle on all of this.
But can I say, because I think there's an interesting, and I heard you talk about these on Friday, and I was very interested when I really perked up. This was maybe something I was going to save for segment two, but I kind of want to get to it now. Is I've said this before. I think we said it on this very show. What is the word you would use to describe the Kroenke ownership style of management? We said family. And I really believe this, not just because like, I believe this from watching how the organization works, but I also believe this from talking to people inside the organization, including, by the way, Tim Connelly, about, hey, they run this like a family. Tim Connelly, by the way, I've said this before, has only ever had nice things to say about Josh Kroenke. And I don't mean nice as in like, oh, he's a good guy. There's that. Like, no, he actually goes at length to say what a good president he is in giving the giving him sort of what he needs to operate well. And I've heard this from not just Tim Connelly, but all members of the front office. Tim Connelly didn't have an agent, which is something you don't do when you are dealing with family. You don't often hire lawyers to make deals with family members, right? Like, oh, hey, like, so to me, the sign that you had this Andy Miller did become involved and became involved at a very specific point, to me, it both is, I think, a disillusioning of the family model, a little bit of a like, you're always family till you're not, till something goes bad and then it's really ugly. That's why people say don't lend money to family members and these types of different things, because when it does go ugly, it gets especially ugly. But it does. But also with Tim Connelly, I wonder how much of this. One question I would love to ask him is: do you regret not having an agent? Do you regret maybe having this? And when Josh Kroenke was asked, I believe by Brendan Vogt, about do you have any regrets? He talked about that as well. About yeah, and some of this was, hey, I had faith. I thought we had this deal in place, and we kind of knew this or that, and it ended up burning me. I kind of feel like I love that the Kroenkes run it as a family organization. I think they do a lot of things really, really smart, really, really well, and really, really like honestly. But when things go bad in this system in particular, I think they can get a little ugly and a little messy. And I'm not saying this was super ugly, super messy, but I do feel like there's an interesting dynamic here of family members getting into a financial dispute that actually couldn't be resolved without bringing in the ugly aspects of this.
Yeah, and I think to that end, it's really interesting that you mentioned that. Well, let's talk about my reaction to that on the other side. Let's talk about kind of the dynamics of that.
That might go 50, 60 minutes, man. I got so much.
We'll talk about that on the other side. But first, I want to tell you about Bet Online. Bet Online is your number one source for all your betting stats and sports info. Find all the latest sports development news and odds, including this year's basketball championship matchup, the NHL Hockey Conference Finals, Major League Baseball, and of course, the latest fighting news from MMA and UFC to boxing. You know, Adam, I had myself a little bet on Andrew Wiggins' first field goal scorer last night. Plus,
you bet on that?
Yeah. Sprinkle, because Wiggins has been the first or second scorer for the Golden State Warriors, and I believe now 10 of 12 matchups. So that was great. Also, in less awesome news, in game one that I went to at Ball Arena for the Western Conference Finals, which was an awesome game to go to, I bet the under, and there was like 8 goals scored. It was the most goals I've ever seen in my life. So that bet was dead by like the second period, but I still had a really great time watching the Avs take command of that series, go Avalanche. BetOnline is your continued source for all your sports wagering information, including live betting, esports, and more. Head to the website today and use your mobile device to learn more about the trends and action. BetOnline, where the game starts. We'll be right back on Locked On Nuggets. Hey guys, before we get back to the show, we got an important favor to ask you. We put together a survey so we can learn more about listeners like you and make your favorite about Locked On Podcasts. Go to lockedonpodcast.com/survey right now to get started. It won't take very long, and everyone that completes the survey can qualify for a chance to win one of 10 $100 Ticketmaster gift cards, so you could pay for like an eighth of an Avalanche playoff ticket. To take our audience survey, go to lockedonpodcast.com/survey. Thanks for your help. All right, back here with Adam Mares, segment 2. So let's pick up where we left off. You know, you mentioned the family aspect and how it's good until it's not. And I think that part of this is, you look at some of the small things that were hinted at in that presser, like when Mike Singer asked about the extension and Kroenke explained the 3-year deal with the opt-outs for him. You run it like a family organization and you're like, I'm not worried about him exercising this option. We're family. And
by the way, can I empathize a little bit with Josh on this? Like, in all sincerity, like the way it's presented, and again, I'm very excited to kind of hear Tim's. Hopefully, we do hear Tim's perspective on all of that in the near future. We'll see. Maybe it won't. Maybe we'll never hear it. But I do empathize with this idea of, I know how badly Tim wanted to be here. Not hiring an agent. People don't believe us when we say this, but we know Tim well enough to know. He really is this way where he's like, I'm not going to sit here and sweat over $1 million, $2 million, $3 million, $5 million. He's just not that kind of guy. He's like, I'm get to do the best job in the world with people I love, friends. And you know what? I'm in a great situation. I don't need to leave. I don't need to stress over any of this stuff. So when you hand him this deal and say, hey, we want to be And he even used these words like, we're going to look at what's league average, which I think is kind of funny because it also hints at sort of their mind frame, not of like, we're going to do the best. We're not going to pay the best. Like, we're going to look at what's league average and we can reevaluate in 3 years to be average. And I think everybody's on board. And then this other deal comes out. And by the way, another pointed term that was used multiple times was sometimes money starts get throwing around that scrambles a person's brain. He kept saying this as if Tim had been hypnotized and his brain had been scrambled. Like, oh, now he doesn't know which way's up and down. And it's hard to even talk to him. Like, there was this language in there that I thought was like, man, this is, that's kind of pointed here. But nonetheless, that's the situation he's presenting of, he was happy, we're happy, we got a deal, everybody's happy. I'm not even thinking that anybody's unhappy. And then once that side door is opened, brains start getting scrambled and all of a sudden nothing's here. So I empathize with it a little bit, but at the same time, I don't believe this is the first time we go back to the Masai situation, not wholly dissimilar, even though Josh said it was, not wholly dissimilar in the idea of, hey, we thought we had a family deal, handshake deals going on and we didn't. So sometimes it's a fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me situation here. But I also don't mind that everybody loved the family aspect of this, everybody. And all of a sudden the rug got pulled out and they feel a little like.
So my problem with this is always that, like, I think honestly, I read too much Locke in college. I think about everything, Locke and Rousseau. Like, I think about everything through the prism of social contract, right? About like, what's the arrangement through the ecosystem between various parties that allow order to be maintained. And one of the problems with this kind of this thought process is that we're family, unless we had two sub 500 seasons in a row or we missed the playoffs twice in a row.
Right, right.
And now the organization has to do what's best for them. That's the key here. Is like, right. That two-way street. And that's why you give him the option is so that he can do what's best for him. And everybody in a professional setting, and this is like a message, if you're a young listener, and you're like, I have a colleague that recently left for a better job opportunity. He called me because he was stressing because he was like, this is the best job I've ever had. But this other job, like the money is just, is like, this other job is offering me a lot of what I want. And I told this person, I said, look, you can care about, you can love the company that you're working for. You can love the people that you work with. You can want to do right by them. But ultimately, this is a professional environment and everyone in a professional environment has to do right by themselves and their priorities. Like, everyone, you can do so in a manner that you can also prioritize, like, what's important to me is taking care of this organization.
Right. Here's the interesting thing about this though, Matt, you're right about all this, by the way, I'm not disagreeing, but I want to give a different perspective of it. Every organization in sports has a philosophy that they're behind intentionally or not, or sometimes both, but like they do the way they structure their business. There's ripple effects, unintended consequences of that lead to successes and failures. The Kroenkes have the family dynamic of this. They're very small, almost skeleton crews relative to other ones. And I think there are very big positives to having those types of smaller crews and you get work done. And there's weaknesses to it as well. Other organizations have big, lots of people on staff, and there's strengths and weaknesses to that. The family model, I don't think is better or worse. And I hope that Josh said that they're going to learn some stuff from this. There are wrong lessons you can learn from this. There are overcorrections you can make. I think that the family model has been responsible for the successes of certainly the Colorado Avalanche and Denver Nuggets. Those are the only two I can really speak to. I'm guessing there's something to it with the Rams as well. But nonetheless, it has led to some successes. This is the flip side of that. There's no perfect model. All of them have compromises. This is one of the compromises, and it's biting the Nuggets in this moment.
Yeah, I think my only thing is I feel like there's a certain level to which the family aspect can be disingenuous to a certain degree, where it's used basically to...
Like, it can be, for sure.
You know, we're family. Like, you know, like we have a personal relationship. If you want something, just come to me. It's still tough to go to your boss constantly and be like, hey, can I get a raise? 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 Because, like, we know that he was making considerably less than other executives, especially of his stature. Right. Like, that's the big key here is, like, if you think Tim Connelly's done a great job and he's got an option, hey, like, and this is just where Mike Singer's, like, questioning kind of came into play, is, like, then why didn't you just extend him? Because if you extend him, and we know that he wants this, like, everyone in that room knows that if there is an extension offered earlier this year, Tim Connelly takes it. Like, that was very obvious. And it wasn't. And that's why Tim Connelly is no longer with the organization. You mentioned kind of like the big picture of this. Like, I guess going forward, the question is going to be, you know, you said that there might be changes. I wonder what that those changes are going to be, because the problem I have is, like, I don't think that the takeaway from this should be we're going to pursue our family approach and try and, you know, not get in these situations where we have to be faced with these tough decisions. It's like, you want worse personnel? Is that what, like, you want people that don't do as good of a job? I guess I'm curious as the fallout from this will be in terms of how they run the organization. Do you have thoughts on that?
Well, I think this is another area where we learned what they value and how they value these things. And, you know, he can't come out and say it, but he said, all but said it, that they view front office people as somewhat expendable. And I got to be honest with you, I don't know that that's wholly wrong. I do think that there are good front office people. I think there's something to organizational stability. There's something to having a reputation of being cheap, even where sometimes the reputation is more important than what is actually there. Like, if people perceive you as this organization that doesn't care about these things. But he basically said, and again, he used some funny language saying, we're not a startup. We're not desperate. Some teams are desperate and they're going to overvalue a front office person. But I think what he's really saying is, look, front office people are very important, but there are more than 30 people out there that can do this job. And we believe in our ability to find people that can do this. The revolving shark thing, we try to have people in line behind so that if you lose one, and Calvin Booth, they feel as that guy, he's been around for 3 years, that you lose one and Calvin Booth just slots in there, and maybe you lose something. It's not what they wanted, but they don't feel it is worth the investment that was going to be commanded from him. And again, whether you agree or disagree, the logic of it is at least something you can say, you know what, that's your philosophy, that's your opinion. And I don't think it's wholly like cheap or bad or evil or any of this.
I've had smart people kind of suggest that, like, look, you know, there just isn't a lot of proof that Tim Connelly is worth that kind of investment. That was kind of what the argument was made. It wasn't even necessarily like, hey, Tim Connelly has not done a good job, which some of the random ass commenters and will bring up to us from time to time. Right. But it was more just like,
and some media members will try to go out there.
It was more just like from the perspective of like, look, there's only so much that they can do. You know, you've mentioned this before about when we were talking about it before Tim left, of what a coach can really do to a franchise. Like, all the analytics people like kind of lean in the same direction of like, look, a coach is only really worth so much. Right. And so I think it's a fair question. My thing has always been with this. It's like, yeah, but there's not a cap on your executive spending. There's not a cap. And the other thing I always do kind of think about this is like, when we're talking, so the deal for Tim Connelly was 5 years, $40 million, $8 million a year, right? I just think about how many players have been signed to like $4 million or $8 million deals that have been completely useless, like that don't do anything, or like that were just like signed to have a backup, whatever. And then it's like, okay, so you're like, you're totally willing to spend it on this.
Right.
Right. But a guy that influences everything in your organization, you reject that kind of premise. And that's where I start to be like, I don't know, man. Like, I think you got to, you know, you mentioned the revolving shark teeth thing. He did. I will say this. He avoided the revolving shark teeth thing was good in terms of presenting an organizational view instead of like, he was trying very hard. You could tell he thought it and he mentioned it in passing once, but you could tell that he was trying very hard.
The shark teeth thing made 4 appearances.
Yeah.
Revolving shark teeth. That's amazing. 4 appearances in one presser. That's why I know it was a line that was like workshopped.
Yeah. He tried very hard to avoid the, look, we're just going to get somebody else. You guys thought we were dumb last time and it worked out fine.
Mentioned that line 3 or 4 times as well. Yeah, back end and front end.
He was very mad that he's taken blowback for both the hire and then people on the back end. Now, I don't remember anybody criticizing the hiring of Masai Ujiri outside of like the idea that he was inexperienced at the time. But like everyone, like Ujiri was already like a rising star from everybody's perspective. Tim, I'll say, was like a what? Like, you know, he hired a scout, and it was a great hire. Like, he deserves a lot of credit for that. and he believes in Calvin. And you and I have said repeatedly, there's no reason to think that you and I have no reason to be like, boy, I don't know. I don't know if Calvin's the guy. We haven't said that at all.
I'm excited for the Calvin era. I'm kind of excited to see what happened. It might be anytime you change, like even with a new head coach, like there have been Igor Kokoschkov. I was like, oh, this is going to be interesting. A new philosophy. It didn't work out. Sometimes that happens. So we'll see with Calvin whether it does or doesn't. But I'm interested about it.
Yeah.
But here's what's interesting, Matt, is this is what I mean about every ownership group has philosophies. It's a new ownership group in Minnesota. They clearly think that the front office is like the most important. Not only they hired Tim Connelly, but now they're starting to build out a staff of other expensive, qualified like people below Tim Connelly. So you look at this and go, they have a philosophy that these people are very important. The Kroenkes have a philosophy that these people are very important but replaceable, and that we have a system of finding these, and we'll see which one works out. The one thing you have to say, and this is as much as I think it was very annoying, and I think everybody sort of rolls their eyes and maybe cringes a bit, but I also think it's accurate, was he did mention the Rams won a Super Bowl. The Avs are 5 games away from winning a Stanley Cup, and the Denver Nuggets are very good. You can criticize us, but right now, when we step away from the emotion, our process is only telling us that the results are only telling us that our process is accurate. So you're going to be mad at me now. See if you're mad at me 2 years from now.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll wrap up with our thoughts on various things. We'll take your questions. We'll get to those as well.
I don't think we'll get to questions. I still have a lot more. Jeff Morton, by the way, the King of Thornton here in the comments has another one. I agree with you. It was a very interesting comment, and I want to get to that. We have a lot of stuff on the altitude stuff I want to get to here that I just feel like it's funny, man. John needs to talk more than once every 5 years, because there was too much in this one presser. Like, he needs to be out there at least once a year.
Get your notes lined up. We'll hit to all those when we come back on Locked On Nuggets. We'll be right back. Back here on Locked On Nuggets, thanks for making us part of your day, your first listen each and every day. Also, make sure to check out the Locked On NBA Big Board, because we're doing the whole draft thing. I just did the mock draft selection, made a little trade. We'll have that up for you later. Make sure to go check out the Locked On NBA Big Board podcast. Host Raphael Barlow from NBA Draft Junkies and author of the NBA Big Board newsletter is joined by Richard Stamen, Sam Ferris, and Leif Thulin, giving fans an in-depth look into the NBA draft, mock draft, player rankings, and of course the big boards. It's free and it's available wherever you get podcasts. All right, Adam, where do you want to start with our final segment here? There's so much to get to, as you mentioned.
I think we could start with Jeff's thing here, where it was funny when it was Ryan Blackburn was asked, like, hey, as the owner of the team, and he said, well, first of all, I'm not the owner. My dad is. I just try not to mess things up on a day-to-day basis. What's interesting about that is the last time he spoke, which was 2017, I believe in response to a question that I had thrown at him, he said something, or no, actually it was a question that Mike Kisla had. I remember it now. Mark Kisla had asked him something about, and he asked it very condescendingly, something about daddy going to tell you what to do and blah, 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 you know, something like this. And he said, look, the buck stops with me. I'm the decision maker. I'm the guy that, you know, I'm as much an owner as he is in terms of I'm the guy that makes decisions here. And the fact that he didn't, in this one, he said, first of all, my dad's the decision maker, I think is actually a little bit revealing about some of the dynamics here that are at play. Again, every organization is so interesting in how they're structured and their philosophy. And the interesting one here is that the president is the son of the owner. So we think of them as the same person, but we know that they're actually not, and that it is within the realm of possibility that the family can have conflicts and can have schisms here. And so I did feel like there was a little bit of a, just so you know, Stan is the one that ultimately makes these big decisions, not me. I'm just here to be the steward of it. And that's a very, very meaningful distinction for where we were 5 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, I talked about this on the show that I had forgotten that they changed the rules, right? They changed the rules for being able to own an NFL franchise as well as an NBA one. So Kroenke took back over as primary ownership. And so it's good that he was like willing to admit it, but it's also just, you know, just kind of shows you like, it's just silly how the, it was really, I'm glad, because it was really annoying when it was like the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. it was really annoying back in the day when we had to all like pretend that Stan Kroenke didn't have anything to do with the organization. It was like, but we all Like, why can't we just talk about this honestly? Because we all know the deal.
And by the way, Stan and Josh have a relationship. Josh and Tim have a relationship. I don't know what Tim and Stan, I mean, my understanding and things I've heard, not just from one person, but lots of different people around, is that Stan is sort of a removed figure. That Josh is kind of in the trenches and he knows everyone. He's doing this and this. And Stan is sort of the like cold almost, you know, like very emotionally removed from all of this. But ultimately, maybe to use Josh Kroenke's word when he was talking about Calvin, maybe the more ruthless one. And part of me wonders, again, like, I don't know how this went down. I just know that I don't think either side, the Kroenke side or the Conley side, feel good about how this went down. And part of me wonders if there was a little bit of a like, hey, I know this is family and it's a little uncomfortable and this and that. And if Stan looks at this and goes, he had an option, he's trying to get more money out of us, get out of here.
No.
We don't, you don't leverage against us. Like, we leverage against you. Nobody leverages us. And I wonder, I don't know, but part of me wonders, like, how did it get so contentious? That's one avenue. Maybe it could have gotten contentious.
How could it get contentious with a guy that's literally suing Comcast to try and get
that's the next big part of this.
Yeah, I mean, look, that's kind of my thing is, and I will say, like, again, I credited Josh for speaking to the media. I thought he did a good job of delivering his points and expressing what he wanted to get across. He answered all the questions that we had. Like, they didn't cut it short. Like, I, again, a lot of respect for Josh Kroenke for doing the presser.
I don't walk out of this, by the way, with, like, I know there was a lot of, from the various podcasts that I was listening to, and even some of the articles, like, some anger almost at Josh. I actually didn't come out of this feeling that way. Like, there were things I disagreed with. There were things I didn't like that he said. But sure. I came out of this going, I'm really glad he shared a perspective, whether I agree or disagree. I'm just glad that we now have an idea of the perspective.
Yeah. I mean, I there were certain things that, again, that I think I will continue to, because for me, I here's a lot of it is like, do I still have frustrations on behalf of the fans? I do. Do I have them with Josh Kroenke? I do not. I have them with a person that was not at the press conference. Like, on some level, you know, when Josh says, well, my dad's the owner, like,
all right, well, where's he then? Can we talk to him?
I can get another chair. Trust me, I can find another chair in Ball Arena. It's so trust me. So, it's not like he doesn't have a place to stay. He's got an apartment upstairs. So, like, all these things are like, that's where it comes into. I want to get, before we move on to the altitude stuff, we'll do that next. I want to get your feedback on the equity question that I asked, where I was really like, I come away not having any of it cleared up, because he reiterates equity, 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 equity. And I'm like, it's been confirmed by multiple sources. It was not equity. So, and like, I was very much like, you know, look, you know, you can say you viewed it as equity, or you could say that you thought it was equity, which would be surprising that I know something you don't. Which is kind of the impression that I was given after he was like, well, I was told multiple times it was equity. And I'm like,
well, he did a great job. I thought of saying equity means lots of different things. Like, that's not just a blanket term that can mean anything. I believe, based on both Mark Stein's reporting and everything else, I believe that it is equity. It's just, as he suggested, it's phantom equity. It's not necessarily like, here is 10% of what we're worth. It is an upside play. That over, if they reach certain, if they appreciate in value over a certain mark, you get a portion, like you get the first amount over X amount over the next 5 years, which would become equity. So it is almost in some ways the potential for equity. And it's a potential that I believe Tim Conley then would be looking at and probably being advised by various people saying, hey, we think it has this chance of hitting that. If it does hit this, this is what you would make. And who knows, if it hits this other mark that's even crazier, you're going to make even more money. So to me, it's not that it's not equity. It's just that it's not guaranteed equity. There's a risk involved in taking it. But so to me, and the Kroenkes, look, he wouldn't be this upset about what was offered. And he even talked about this, like, this is the new paradigm that we're in. Like, this is the new way, I guess, contracts are going to be structured, and I'm not too happy about it. So he wouldn't feel that way if it was truly like false equity.
Well, two things here. One, I think the distinction matters because you have different legal rights as an owner, as a person with equity. Sure. Like, there are like those things are very structured. And so if it's just for me, like my read on it is just like, it was a bonus. It may have been a bonus tied to, like, in some ways it's not any different than, honestly, like it's not any different than a player having a bonus for an NBA Finals appearance, right? Like, to me, if like once it comes back to it was just money, that's wrong. Like, if you genuinely are like, we want to maintain all and complete 100% control of this ownership entity within this family, you know, even though I'm just like, really? For like 0.05%? Okay, I understand it, though. Like, I get it. I understand it, right? You're not a startup. Fair point. But when it becomes just a question of like, okay, but it really was just money. Like, that's all it was it was just money. I will also tell you, like, I am very convinced that there will be, like, there's going to be stories of the owners' meetings and contentiousness with the Minnesota Timberwolves. The level of piss that people are about this.
And can I tell you something? I kind of get the sense that this Minnesota Timberwolves new ownership group, that, by the way, isn't even the majority owner yet, is a little reckless and maybe a little crazy. Like, this deal, as a part of like a first move, is a little bit wild. It might work out. Maybe it's crazy. I mean, Lake 7-8 years ago did some things early on where you're like, man, is this guy nuts? And it turns out he's a genius nuts. Like, he's willing to do some of this stuff. But you've also had some other owners that have done some kooky things. And then you turn out and you're like, no, they're just crazy.
Yeah.
In this group, I kind of get the sense, even the A-Rod taking a picture that was totally unnecessary. Like, I don't remember what the caption was with the thing in the background. I look at that and I go, that was not an accident. You might be a crazy person that just had to be the one to reveal the news and just couldn't stand the way. Maybe. I don't know. So anyway, my point is that ownership group, these are, I won't say reckless, but they're very wild first moves to be making.
Well, let me tell you, a reckless front office organization with this level of influence from Clutch Sports makes me extremely like, this is going to get this could get interesting, because like, Clutch's entire thing is like influence over precedent. Like, that's their entire thing, is like, they don't care about the way that things have been done in the past. They care about pursuing the most aggressive path to meet their goals. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. Let's talk about altitude. Honestly, like, I was trying to like keep up with a bunch of different things, so I feel like I breezed too much over that on the recap show. So give me your thoughts on his comments on the altitude dispute and your reaction to it.
It was the part that bothered me the most. Like I said, like, I walk away from this now with the Tim Connelly aspect of this and say, look, I wish Tim Connelly was here. I liked him. I thought he did a good job. I think he deserves credit. I think the Kroenkes made the mistake, but knowing some of the details that Josh shared, I'm like, you know what? What can you do here? You know, whatever, move on. This one to me bothered me. And the thing that bothered me most was another one of his very established talking points that he brought up two or maybe three times, which was, trust me, I feel it even more than fans, because we have a financial, you guys just feel it because you're fans. We feel it because we're both fans and business involved in this. And I sat here and I just think, you're saying that. And then Brendan Vogt asked a great question about, or maybe it was Duvalier, Superstar Dev. He asked him, you know, what obligation do you feel to the city when you own a team? And he said, oh, quite a bit. Like, we know this is a thing. And this is the thing. Those two things are not necessarily congruent to say, hey, we feel it because we feel it as a business standpoint. Oh, by the way, we're losing money. Like, you guys have no idea. And then second to say, yeah, but we owe it to a city that sports are and have since antiquity been an important aspect of holding a city together. And by the way, this blackout through Comcast, this dispute we've been in, has happened at the same time that the city and the world have been in a global pandemic, that stresses have been super high, that all of these different things, pressures have been placed on a city, that you're holding it out. And oh, you feel this more than everybody else in a city because you're losing a little bit of almost negligible amount of money for somebody that's worth $10+ billion. Like, to me, that was a talking point that shows me, like, sometimes I wonder, this is a harsh criticism, I don't know how often billionaires have ordinary friends. I mean, they have guys that can be like, hey, man, why don't you say that line to me real quick? Just so I can tell you what that feels like as somebody who's not a billionaire. He's not necessarily all that rich. Let me just tell you how that sounds to me, because it sounds like you don't know what the hell it's like to be a normal person, and you don't understand the connection people feel to their city through their sports fans. And it's, yes, you're losing a negligible amount of money, but these people are losing something they feel much more tethered to. And I don't think you should ever say you feel it more than the fans. That part to me was the only part of this that I listened to and I go, that kind of pisses me off.
Yeah. You know, and but when he said, like, it's been very frustrating for me professionally and personally, part of me just, like, I come away with that just being like, if this is personal and that's impacting your reactions to it, like, that's bad, right? Like, you should just be like, okay, what is, like, the most objective? Because that's how this whole thing has felt, is just like, we're not going to take a loss on this. We're not going to take a loss on this. We're not going to take a, no matter how many millions we lose, you know?
But again, this goes back to what we said about the Stan Kroenke piece of this is, I think Stan, maybe from what I've heard from different people, might have a little innat in him. He might have a little bit of a, like, I'm going to dig my heels in and does this hurt me? Yes. But you know what? I will not sign. Cause one of the one question that nobody asked that I kind of wish was, you're 3 years into this deal of losing money. Was there not a short-term solution that you could have bit the bullet and suffered the loss while you figured out your long-term solution? I have a hard time imagining there wasn't a shorter-term compromise to be had, as unpalatable as it might have been, to where you're not punished. The fans are not being punished alongside you and Comcast in this deal, to where now 3 years down the line, you're like, behind the scenes, we've been working on this, and now we're getting away. Our short-term contract is up, and now we can pivot to this new model that screws over Comcast on that side.
Yeah, that gets into something like the futures of this stuff, which is like, I think a lot of this is going to change over the next 10 years. The NBA is probably, let me put it this way. The NBA knows this is going on in its markets, not just in Denver, in Dallas, a larger market than Denver, to my knowledge. In Philadelphia, I think there's been conflicts. There's been like a bunch of these where there's an ongoing, the RSNs are having issues with these cable companies. And it's just kind of funny in that the ownership level just continues to be like, well, no, we're just going to like continue to try and fight this and try and drag this out until we can reach like an agreement that sets us back to the way that things used to be. I feel very much like the league will pursue options that are like, all right, how do we just get around this? If this is such a problem, how do we direct market our product to the fans? Like, we have league pass. Like, what do we need to do? Who do we need to get in bed with that will, whether it's Bally's or whoever, to be able to provide direct access to the team? Like, how do we provide that infrastructure to the team so that if they need to broadcast their own games, they can do
it? And by the way, I'm empathetic to how difficult that is. Like, it's not the easiest thing. One, I asked Matt Hutchins 3 years ago, like, are you guys going to pioneer a new way for this? And he said, no, we're going to read the market and see what's been successful and go from there. And to me, I'm thinking that's not a viable option. And this is what is my only real point. Again, I was upset about the language he used and saying they feel it more. I just feel like that was bad. He needed to run that by somebody. Like, he does not, he's missing a type of advisor that would allow him to know that that is an offensive thing to say, but whatever, it's a misdemeanor offense. It just bothered me. But if you look at the Comcast dispute in aggregate, here's my biggest takeaway. And he even mentioned this. The Kroenke Enterprise is a massive enterprise, perhaps the biggest in all of sports. I don't know if there's anyone bigger that owns on two different continents and four different cities and seven different teams when you factor in the Mammoth and Rapids and everything else. They have their hands in all of that. And on top of that, they also own a media company. I think that might be an impossible task. I really think it might be, because when he talks about like, hey, this is a tough thing, nobody solved it. And I'm thinking, it probably takes a full attention just to get that part of it right. On top of, now you have to run the Rams, you have to run Arsenal, you have to run the Rapids and Nuggets, you have to figure out a training facility, you have to do all of this. And that's the thing that I think became clear hearing it. I don't think it was what he wanted to make clear, but it's what I felt made clear, was they don't have the bandwidth to tackle the shifting paradigm of media distribution. And because they don't have the bandwidth for that, we get the situation that we're in right now, a 3-year lockout during the greatest run of Avs and Nuggets of the last 20 years.
Their organization is very much like the Fenway Sports Group, actually. Fenway owns the Red Sox, Liverpool, the Penguins, and they own 80% of NESN.
So there you go. There's one.
Like, there's like a comp.
There might be two. There might be a few. Yeah.
It is rare. I just thought that was like an interesting kind of comp, because they're run very differently, I think. Like, one is very much like a business venture. This is, again, like a family business. That's run over, that's reiterated consistently. Somebody asked me, like, when do you think we'll actually see the practice facility? And I said, you know, a lot of this, my read on his comments were basically that we won't see it until they just decide to do it, right? And it's like, what does that mean? And like, that's the point, is that this could be done in a year. Like, getting the zoning, for, I think, for the practice facility would not be difficult. It's getting the zoning for all the businesses that they want to build up around it to make money that is more difficult. Like, they mentioned, like, the zoning issues for whatever it is that they're going to do. And he mentioned, like, well, it's easier to do the practice facility than a high rise or the shops or, you know, an amphitheater or whatever else they're going to build out there. And so, like, I do just kind of wind up being like, okay, but like, build the practice facility, like, just, you know, like, you have it, like, get something so that your players have access to this, because it's going to help your free agency push as much as anything. Like, that's really essential for free agency talks, is like, hey, look at these great facilities that you can have. You can get an apartment out here, and then you can just walk to the practice facility. Like, all those types of things are potentially, like, lucrative. But it's really just a matter of, there's no, like, big thing standing in the way. It's just, and again, like, I find themes with this. It's, they're going to wait until they can make money off of it, and that's when they will start investing. Once they can make money, they will start investing.
I had a different read on it, and I'm not sure you're right or I'm right, so I'll just kind of give a different perspective, which is, and by the way, he said the same thing 5 years ago. This is another one of those lines where he's like, it's in the process, it's in the works. Yeah. We don't have anything to show just yet, but it's right, you know, whatever. And it's like, okay, that's been 5 years. So what are we, another 5 years minimum away? Which, by the way, if you ask me, I would say, yes, we probably are. This is a plans that are probably not going to come into fruition in the Jokic era. But here's the thing. We start to ask, they're in Denver. They signed that deal where they're going to have to stay in Denver for at least until 2040, I believe, is the very earliest. So I don't think this is a thing where it's like, why build a facility when you can just move them to Seattle or something? I don't think that is the case. What I think is the case is, as he referenced, we obviously own Ilitch's. We're involved in the real estate there. I think, and this has already been leaked to some capacity, there are major development plans there. And I think, why build a new facility when you're actually building an entire new neighborhood in Denver that 10 years from now probably exists and changes the entire landscape of the Denver metro downtown area that will include a facility then? But the problem is, if you're a newer owner and you're in Salt Lake and you're like, we're going to build this facility, you know, 5 miles from the building, we have this open space and we're going to build it, you get that done in 1 year. If you're redeveloping a downtown area with condos and dining and a new stadium and a new practice facility, that's more of a 5 to 10 year project. And to me, that's why I say it's not just building a training facility. It sounds to me more like integrating a facility into a larger development. And that means a lot longer time. And it also explains why this hasn't been like updated, why they can't just say, yes, it's this, it's going to go here and it's going to go there. It's because it's probably connected to all these other building and apartment complex over here and this or that.
So this is, again, this is just like a difference in like how I view these things versus the Kroenkes. And guess what? They're billionaires, so they get to get what they want. I just think it's kind of interesting because if you asked me where to build a practice facility, 5, 10 years ago, I would have said, not 5 years ago, 10 years ago, I've been like, oh, like Ilitch would be perfect. Like, you build the practice facility at Ilitch, and then like you've got this lake between the arena and the practice facility, and the players can live downtown, yada, yada, yada. Now, I'm honestly of the viewpoint that you should just do it in Commerce City. Like, you should just do it there. Like, you
really?
Yes.
Oh, I'm so against that.
Because the players like having a facility that's isolated, that's removed, that feels very much like this is where we go to work, like this is where we go to put the stuff in. The Cavs have one like this, the Spurs have one like this, the who else has one like that? The Warriors used to have one like this. I don't know what their current situation is. Players have expressed like they seem very comfortable when it's like a small building in the middle of nowhere that they drive to. I think honestly, like, part of it is like, it feels cool to have like this building that's just like, it's just yours. Yeah. Again, it's not that big of a deal. You can just put it, it's just a practice facility. I get it. The fact that practice facilities matter, I can understand if you're a fan, you're like, why the fuck does this matter? It does. It's strange to me too, but it does. And so like, this continues to be kind of like a question, I think, to manage. What else do you have? Do you have anything else?
How much effort you put in, like, think about how much effort Jokic puts into his body and this or that. And you just want to know that you have all the best resources available to you. And I also understand it from the Kroenke's perspective, even if it's like bothersome. Like there's so many of these you say like, well, I understand, but it still, it makes the team worse. And I understand it in that training facilities are not cheap things. You build them and it sounds like they have a longer term solution. So it, even back in 2017, if you build one knowing that by 2027, you're going to be doing this other development, why build a 10-year training facility? And I think that's probably where they're at.
What else do you have on your list? Do you have anything else that we haven't gotten to?
I'm sure there might be some stuff that'll pop up. I'm trying to look here. He confirmed, this is a small thing and it's not that big of a deal because we all assumed it, but he confirmed that the plan is to give Jokic the Supermax. You know, not that we, he was the last piece. Tim Conley had said it. Michael Malone had said it. Nikola Jokic had said it, but it was like, hey, the guy that actually is going to be the one to offer the money hasn't said it. He came out and said it. That's the plan. So I think you can rest assured that that is still the plan. And then he talked about giving Calvin the extension, which I thought was really interesting. He put himself in a position. He didn't come out and say we're going to give him an extension, but he strongly implied that that was the case of some type of stability beyond this 1 year and that they'll have more information for us shortly. He put himself in position to me where if that doesn't happen, I would kind of be like, that was a weird thing to say then if your plan wasn't to give him some type of, hey, option on a second year or something that says like, hey, this isn't a one summer thing.
Yeah, the implication I kind of said this on the show. My takeaway is probably that they'll give him, I would say, a 2 year extension, on the same or an upgraded new position with a 2 year deal with an option, like a non guarantee in the last year. I think there'll probably be some flexible. Like again, a lot of this is like Tim Conley's deal was short and not very lucrative in the beginning, and like you start at the bottom and you go back up, and now the Kroenkes get to go back to the bottom and start from there, and right, not have to worry about paying executives as much. Turns out success is costly. So
I will say though, in this one way, I actually do appreciate. Actually, I appreciated a lot of what Josh said. I actually think when you get through some of the bad phrasing and some of this, like I really. There were parts of me that walked away impressed, you know, with this saying, like, I feel like I know their vision. I agree with a lot of it. And I'm in the parts I disagree with, I'm kind of curious to see, like time will tell us. But the shark, this is where the revolving shark teeth metaphor, which has clearly been a thing that it was intentional. They probably thought about this years ago and they really did built it in this way. They were asked why they didn't go outside the organization. And that's one of the reasons why. And I think that they're, I don't know if it's right or wrong, but I do think the logic is sound of like, half of the value of having a front office person is they know how the organization works. They know how the players operate, who they are as people. And that gives you a leg up as opposed to, oh, this is a smart guy. Let's just bring him in. And so the Calvin Booth piece of this makes a lot more sense in that light, not just as a, we're being cheap and hiring the next guy up, but as in a, this is how we do things.
As you kind of like, you know, you speak about it, and I agree with you in large part on how Josh Kroenke handled the press conference and understands the idea of a cultural approach and all these type of things. The reason I will kind of like return to my position of this was not a great outcome or, you know, the whole situation is just simply this. The Nuggets wanted Tim Conley to stay. Tim Conley wanted to stay. Yeah. And the only differential was money. Like that to me is like where this gets into is again, after the equity question, I cannot view either the things that's been reported nor the way that Josh Kroenke answered the question as this was a true giving an executive an equity stake. Like I can't view it that way. If it was, I would be like, look, I don't think it really matters because you're talking about 0.03% or whatever, Fine. Okay. You operate a level that's above me, fine. But when it just gets into this was just about money, that's when I'm just like, guys, just keep the really good executive just that wants to be here. Like, just keep the guy. Like, you have $10 billion. I don't want to tell you how to spend your money. I really don't. But, like, this one just seems like it was unnecessarily complicated. Like, that's where I kind of come into this. Having an organizational view is good. But at the undercurrent of all this is still a, when Josh said there's a certain level to which it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah. One other quick thing here that I think was interesting. He was asked about the Michael Porter Jr. contract and if he regretted
it. Yeah, I was just bring that up. Yeah, good point.
And the thing that I thought was interesting is I think everybody has assigned Tim Conley as the guy that pays everyone early.
Yeah. But
Josh Kroenke kind of took ownership of it in many ways, saying this is our organizational, let me see, I have it written down here because it was a very specific framing, or our organizational philosophy. He used it twice in that answer. It's our organizational philosophy that we reward people that like Denver. We know we're a small market. So if you like Denver and want to be here and you're a hard worker, we bet on people. He's a hard worker. He loves the game. And all of those things, we decided to pay him early. And I just thought that was an interesting thing to sort of own, because I think a lot of people say, that's Tim's problem. He always does this. It's actually, I think, in the Kroenke Sports handbook, like, we are someone that will get things done early when we believe in people. So just kind of an interesting note here. He did not have to own that one, by the way. That would have been the easiest one to be like, well, that was Tim. He, I don't know. We were kind of worried about it, but.
Yeah, I was impressed with that, honestly. And I was a little bit grateful just for MPJ. The way people have started to talk about it as like, oh boy, what a disaster, has been a little bit like, let's not write this thing before it's done. Like, yeah, this could absolutely be a Chandler Parsons kind of deal. But guess what? The Grizzlies got over it, and they made the Western Conference semifinals. Right. Like, it's not.
By the way, man, I have to put the time out here because we're over the worst moment of Michael Porter. We're over the worst, like, 7 months of Michael Porter. Go back and watch some Michael Porter highlights. Just go back and watch him. The guy's incredible. His career's not over. It might be, but I don't. It's not for certain over. And if this guy comes back and plays to his upside, there's a chance in a year's time we're like, no longer, we're going to laugh at the fact that we talked about this as a bad deal or what have you. Like, it's unfortunate, but we're at the worst moment for perspective on him. He's a hell of a talent that somehow shot 65% true shooting on nothing but ridiculously difficult pull-up jumpers.
You got anything else? Oh, let's talk Quinn Snyder real quick.
Do you want to save something for the rest of the week?
You're like, can't empty everything. Yeah, let's talk tomorrow. We'll talk Quinn Snyder. We'll talk a little bit. We'll start talking about draft talk, I promise. I actually started doing draft prep, so we'll talk a little bit about the draft tomorrow. We'll get into that. We'll look at the Nuggets options at 21. We'll do all that and more tomorrow. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Appreciate you guys hanging in. Have a great week. Hit us with your questions, comments. Give us the 5-star reviews. Subscribe to us on YouTube. We'll see you guys again tomorrow with another edition of Locked On Nuggets.